For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The top 10 prospects in Major League Baseball. This is what we've been waiting for. We've been whittling down all the way from 100 down to the top 10. And Jack just took a break from Eclipse Watch. Just got in. How do those glasses work for you?
I can't see anything right now.
Now you're blind. Yeah.
Like the whole point of these is to look at the sun. And like I tried them on inside when I first got them. I got them like 2-3 days ago. And I was like, huh, I wonder what it looks like. And I was like, I can't see anything. They're literally meant to just look at the sun and nothing else. So don't try driving with Eclipse glasses on.
Or don't try umpiring. I feel like it might be what Angel Hernandez sees.
Yeah, that's behind home plate. It's the Angel Hernandez contact prescription.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you could put like goggles on and it shows you like what it feels like to be colorblind or be whatever. It's like, this is the Angel Hernandez eyesight situation here. But we're here to talk top 10 prospects, and we talked about how, you know, I think the last group, it was a lot of guys that we've talked plenty about, and I think in this group, it's going to be a lot of the same thing. So, of course, we're going to talk about who these guys are for those who may just be finding us on, you know, YouTube for the first time, or, you know, those who may not remember everything we've said about all of these guys, but the angle also is going to kind of try to explain why we stacked the top 10 the way that we did. Because it really does become splitting hairs once you get to the best of the best. And I think, you know, that's just one of those things where it becomes really difficult to identify, you know, who's six is versus eight when you're trying to project their major league career. Whereas it's a lot easier to look at a crop of prospects and say, that guy's a future big leaguer. That guy may be someone that ends up being stuck in between. So it's razor thin here, but that's what makes it fun. And I think that's where you can have some really fun conversations within it as well. So we start with number 10 in Jackson Merrill, who now is a big leaguer and graduates pretty much, I think, very, very soon from prospect status. But the important thing with Merrill is that, you know, we finalized this list before the season, and it was based on the assumption that Merrill would do what he's doing right now at the big league level. So seeing him do that is validating, I think, to the aggressive ranking here. But he's a guy that we've had really high for a long time. He's a guy that I think people don't even realize how young he is in that Padres system, not even 20 or on that Padres team now, not even 21 years old yet. I think he turns 21 in less than 2 weeks, but still extremely young. I think the fact that he's doing what he's doing at the big league level while learning a new position is even more insane, and showing the comfort at the new position is also very insane. There's a lot of different things that make Jackson Merrill extremely impressive, but he was a top 10 prospect for us before really playing consistently in the big leagues in the outfield. And really, I think what pushed me over the top was seeing him live in Arizona, seeing the comfort in the outfield already, but more importantly, seeing how he was controlling his ABs against big league arms, seeing the way he goes about his business, and just how comfortable he was. It's really hard to look at him and say that there's 10 other prospects I'd rather have than him. It's a lot of the Evan Carter effect. And I think you can make the case that there might be a little bit more polish to Merrill's swing and aspects of his game, whereas, you know, Carter's a little toolsier. But you know, I think there's some similarities there in what they can already do and what you're still waiting on, because there's still plenty to dream on with them too.
Now, having said that, I think if you push Evan Carter to the big leagues at this point last year, like Carter spent pretty much the entire year in Double A, and Jackson Merrill got, he got 46 games in Double A. That's right. 68 games in High A, 46 in Double. So Merrill, I guess, when you look at reps at the Double A level, was ahead of Carter, but they're the same age when Carter was going into the 2023 season versus Merrill going into the 24 season. If you put Evan Carter in the big leagues last year and said swim, he's floundering.
You think at the beginning of the season?
I think at the beginning of the season last year, he'd be floundering at the major league level. Now, he was ready at the end of the year, and he raked at the end of the year, absolutely deserving of that opening day spot because he was amazing at the end of the season and in the postseason. But I'm not sure that there's really many other guys in this top 100 that could do what he's doing, where it's, hey, man, like, it's like asking Evan Carter to play shortstop or like asking Evan Carter to play third base. I don't want to compare shortstop to center, but you know, it's not left field that Merrill's playing. It's center that he's playing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's holding his own, we just looked at the Fangraphs page, like one defensive run save, no outs above average, which is average. Like that is, he is a 50th percentile center fielder playing center field for the first time in his professional life. And he's hitting .324 through his first 12 games. I don't think there's many guys that can do that.
Look at the 4-for-4 he had last game. It wasn't just a 4-for-4. Three hits on Logan Webb, and then he picks up another hit, 105, off of Camilo Duvall.
Come on.
And then steals second base. And then he was representing the tying run in the top of the ninth with two outs. Singles, steal second, just nobody else could pick him up there. Again, those were the things that I saw, even in the Arizona Fall League 2 years ago, when he was the youngest guy out there, or one of, just and just briefly talking to him then, he was really working hard at his shortstop defense because people were saying, oh, I don't know if Merrill's going to stick there with the way he's, you know, getting thicker and, you know, just with the way he's built and we think he's going to progress. And he went with the, you know, route of, oh, I'm going to get stronger, but I'm not going to lose my agility. We talk about how J-Rod did that. Everyone always said, oh, Julio Rodriguez, he's going to thicken, slow down, move to a corner, blah, blah, blah. He gets thicker, but he also maintained his agility and his explosiveness. And now he's one of the better center fielders in the game and flies. I think with Merrill, it's a subdued version of that, but you watched him really work hard. I mean, he was, when I was going to those games early, he was there taking ground balls literally before anybody else, just working his butt off, and told me about how important it was for him to get better at shortstop defense. So then you have to undo that, basically. And that's always going to be valuable to have that, you know, in your bag, and you never know where they're going to put him back, you know, long term. But beyond that, he's now goes into the season last year. And then, yeah, I think last year just was pretty aggressively pushed, starts to play a really good shortstop, has to get acclimated to hitting at, you know, more challenging levels at each stop, being one of the younger guys there too. And then finishes the year and they start saying, hey, man, like, start to get some reps in the outfield. Like, okay. Starts to get some reps in left. And then all of a sudden, with how he looked in the spring, they're like, all right, let's try to see in center field. And they throw him out there. And I think they almost wanted to see sink or swim, because if he sunk, like, okay, it's fine. Yeah, we got our answer.
You're good.
And you know, we'll let you climb and get ready. But if he swims, holy crap, we have our center fielder. I don't even know if the Padres thought that he would swim this way. I thought he would swim in terms of offensively surviving, giving you good ABs. And we talked about it in the beginning of spring training, a little bit before spring training. We kind of called our shot by saying, hey, I think this guy's going to find a way to make the team. I thought he'd make it in left. I think if you would go back and visit, I said the bat would be great in the back of the lineup. He's going to grind out ABs. He's going to give them a little bit of speed. He's going to put the ball in play consistently. He's just going to be a great bottom of the order bat at the very least. But what we ended up seeing now is a guy that's more than that offensively, or at least it looks like it already. And he's playing center, not left. That's even beyond what I imagined. And I felt like we were kind of aggressive with what we were saying about him being able to make the opening day roster, you know, that early in the spring training kind of cycle.
No, I mean, you want to speak it to fruition. You want to speak it into existence. And then all of a sudden he's on the roster and the team's going to Seoul and he's on the plane. And it's like, wow, really? Like, this is a thing? This is happening? And it did. And he was bludgeoning the ball out there in South Korea. I'm sure you remember game one. It was like, 106, 107, 105, mm-hmm. and he had an over 3 day to show for it, but he was killing the ball. He comes back for domestic opening day and he's killing the ball. So offensively, that was like where you thought it was going to be fine. But man, like I cannot imagine being thrusted into the situation that he was and swimming the way he was. And I love that you comp the physicality to J-Rod because frankly, I think the narrative surrounding Julio going into spring training in 22 was very similar. Merrill is a shortstop moving to left, moving to center, but Julio is a right fielder that was moving to center. And as soon as they saw that he was comfortable, we got the viral video of Julio in Scott Service's office. And it was like, hey, how do you feel in center? I feel really good. You're going to be there on opening day. Like, that's the thing, man. Like, the best.
He was fast track, too.
He was fast track. The best prospects in the world are the ones that can handle something like this. They get shit thrown at them and they adapt. And he's adapting and thriving in front of our eyes right now. I want you to make it clear that this was not a big league bump, like a spring training bump for Merrill. No. He was going to be 10 if he was in San Antonio right now.
Well, yeah, we finalized it, you know, pretty much before even there was enough going on in spring training to really have much of a sample of anything. So, no, absolutely. I think that's an important point to make. And then you look at the other aspect of what Merrill's doing. Yeah, you know, I think people are probably wondering, okay, well, Dylan Cruz is kind of almost anywhere else you look is, I think, regarded as a top 10 prospect. You know, why Merrill over Cruz? Yeah. Now that Merrill's playing a decent center field that I think is only going to get better, and you know that he can play a decent shortstop, you also know he can play second, he could also play third, he could also play left. He can pretty much play almost every position on the field now, I think, aside from catcher and pitcher. I think the fact that he can also play a solid center field, then you look at the bat. I mean, contact-wise, it's an easy plus-hit tool. Power-wise, we talked about the Yelich comp of, I don't think he's ever going to hit as many home runs as Yelich, but the comp of, hey, he's going to be a good big leaguer for a few years, and he might not really settle into his power until year 3 or 4 in the big leagues because he's 20 years old, and he's still learning how to, you know, sink his body, how to leverage hitters' counts, how to let it eat to the pull side a little bit more, things like that. Right now, he's more of just a line drive guy, and I think he's going to start to lean into the power more as he matures. And I do think that there's a lot of similarities to that with Yelich. So you look at that, and then you look at, I think the speed is probably pretty comparable between him and Cruz. Maybe Cruz is a tick faster, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's about the same. Like, what is Cruz, and this is not an indictment on Cruz, but what is he capable of that, you know, Merrill isn't reasonably capable of either? And now Merrill is ahead of him in his progression and doing it at the big league level now. So you can even more solidly say it. But before that, again, I was just looking at it and I'm saying, he's already had success where Cruz is trying to find his footing. He's a year younger, and I think you can dream on a lot of the same things, and you can point towards a lot of the same things as already being strengths.
Yeah, I think advantage Cruz would be in the plate discipline department. Like, Merrill really doesn't walk, and you've got a 40 right now, but a 50 present. Like, he's going to be thrown into the fire. He's already thrown into the fire, and when that 324 turns into 270, he's going to see the need for the walk at the big league level to increase. And I think that walk rate is naturally going to go up. So I agree with that 10-point jump in plate discipline. I think the other that you could point to is Cruz can be a top of the scale defensive center fielder, while Merrill can probably hold his own in center. But Merrill's well-rounded offensive profile at this point likely surpasses Cruz's well-rounded offensive profile. And we know that offense is 75% of the recipe, and defense is the other 25%. So you're always going to have the majority win.
No, and you know what's interesting too? I'm looking at Savant, and I, you know, almost never look at it really anymore, just because of.
Are what's you not a Savant guy at all anymore? Like, are you?
I've just become so jaded, man. Just seeing all of the screenshots and just people just saying, "Oh, bubbles this." Like, it, now I have a take on a player based on the bubbles. I need to get back to it. It is a good resource. I end up using other resources just because I think I look at the bubbles and I get annoyed. But the thing I was going to say real quick was 0 outs above average at this point in center field or in the outfield in general is actually 70th percentile, according to Savant.
Oh, no.
So that's interesting.
That's very interesting. I was just going to say, like, the main thing that I use Savant for is player pages. I want to see how opponents hit against a pitcher's arsenal. Like, how are they doing against his four-seam, things like that. And then hitters too. How are they faring? It's a great free tool to see how big leaguers are faring against fastballs, breaking pitches, off speed, things like that. So
no
like,
doubt
player pages are amazing
in terms of like framing and base running aspects. Some things that you're just not going to get anywhere else that I do think are valuable on there as well. Mm-hmm. But there is a little bit more to the game than the bubbles, as much as people on social like to highlight the bubbles. The last thing I'll say on Merrill is I do think he can become an above average center fielder. I think if you're already comfortable now, I do think that the jumps and the reads and the routes are only going to get better and better and better. And I do think he can turn into an above average outfielder. Where I think Cruz could end up separating is, yeah, I think the approach is a huge aspect because Merrill is always going to be, I think he's going to walk more, but I think he's always going to be that I don't strike out. I make a lot of contact. I don't think he's swung and missed in the zone in the last like six games. That's going to be something that is always edge Merrill, but Cruz is going to walk more. And I'd probably bet on Cruz tapping into more power at the peak just because of the violence and the way that he uses his lower half is just different. But that said, very close. It was razor sharp, like razor thin. And ultimately, it's just I was thinking about if I'm starting my franchise, I'll keep going back to this one. I'm just going to take the guy in Merrill that I think is a little bit safer at this point with what he's shown through Double A. This was even before the big leagues. And then also has enough projection where you can feel really good about where he could be headed soon too. Number nine, Paul Skeens, a guy that you've seen plenty of recently in the Pittsburgh Pirates system. And I mean, I think when you look at the top pitching prospects in baseball, it's 1A, 1B, and we'll basically talk about that as it pertains to 8 and 9. What I'm really excited about is you had a nice sit down with Paul Skeens that we're going to be putting out here on the show. What, in the next couple of days? What
do we think? I think Wednesday. Yeah.
How long? 30 minutes? 40 minutes with Skeens?
Yeah. I told him, hey, man, you want to do 20 minutes? And he was like, yeah, cool with it. And then we get up to just outside the radio booth. There's like a nice little club in Indianapolis. And I was like, all right, yeah, good for 20. He was like, yeah, let's do it. And then all of a sudden it was 31. And like, it was one of those, you hear it all the time that you could have gone for an hour, but we could have gone for an hour. And it's fun that both the top pitching prospects in the game are now friends of the program.
Yeah.
Like Job, one of your favorite interviews of all time is with Jackson Job. And Skeens, one of, if not my favorite interview of all time that I just, you know, put in the can this weekend. And I'm excited for you guys to hear that on Wednesday.
I'm excited to hear the whole thing. You know, you sent me the little snippet about sliders because what I'm working on right now, which I'll be putting out every single week, the bonus episode subscribers will get the audio version of this most of the time before and a little bit more in detail. But every week I'm going to be putting out on the website just a roundup of, you know, relevant pitching prospects, some of the top pitching prospects that, you know, we talk about on here and break down their start, what stood out to me, you know, what was working for them, what wasn't, and just do that starting pitcher roundup throughout the minor leagues every Monday/Tuesday. That'll be coming out. It'll be out by the time you all are listening to this, unless you listen to it legitimately immediately on Monday night as we're recording this. It'll be out on Tuesday morning. And Skeens was one of the starts that I highlighted there because it was really fun to watch. What I asked you was, what did Paul say about his sliders? Because we know Paul Skeens throws 101. We know he sits 100 with his fastball and that there's just something about it at the point of release that screw the shapes, who cares? It is just explosive, hard to see, hard to hit. You asked Paul about kind of what goes into the different shapes that we've seen since spring training started, because in college, it was just the sweeper. And now we're seeing a little bit more of a two-plane break. We're seeing some that are shorter and harder and just more vertical, shorter horizontal. Like you're seeing almost three iterations of his slider and at slightly different velocities. And I'll just like kick it to you about how he described that. And I can fill in any other parts that, you know, for further context. But I thought it was really interesting because it makes sense a little bit more now that he's in AAA, considering that he's really feeling out these sliders because you know that sweepers have dramatic splits. Lefties are going to hit him better. Maybe not Skeens is as well, but still. And he's focused on performance. He wants iterations of his slider that are going to perform the best against big league hitters. And he's getting instant feedback right now with these different variations that he throws.
So he's really turning a 2.5 pitch arsenal that you saw in college into maybe a 7 pitch arsenal. And like, that's scary. And it's not a grip thing. He said he's got like 3 different iterations of this slider. I kind of threw at him like, all right, so you've got this baby cut, this sweep, and then something in between. And he said, yeah, it's the same grip. I'm just manipulating how I release it. There are some that I'm a little bit more behind. There are some that I get on the side of. And I'm like, your arm is working a billion miles an hour, and you know how to feel getting outside the ball like that. That is top of the scale, elite feel for your entire body. And at 6'6", 250, nobody else on the planet can do that. This guy is in rarefied air, and so is Job. What I think you'll get from Wednesday's conversation, and I'm sure what you got from that slider conversation quickly, is this guy's just scraping the surface of what he can be as a professional pitcher when it comes to pitch arsenal and getting major leaguers out.
Yeah, I mean, kind of understanding more about the iterations of the slider and what that's going to do for him. That makes it even more of an insane Skeens Job, put them together. I don't care. I'm not really going to die. I'm not going to die on a hill of one being better than the
other.
Are
they tied for eighth? Like, they might just be tied.
And I've never really wanted to do that before, but because it's the top pitching prospect spot, like, to me, they're the same. Like, if you told me, okay, we're doing this, you start your franchise situation, and normally I could say, okay, I'll pick this guy, I would just have a panic attack and flip a coin. Like, it just is so difficult because there's so many different things. But that splinker now being added to the fold, as you mentioned, now just going from, we really only saw fastball slider to now seeing fastball slider, that splinker at 95 is crazy. And he commands the heck out of it. I think he threw five last outing, all five were strikes. And he can start it off the plate, you know, away and run it in for a strike. He could start it down the middle and tie you up because it's still 90 freaking five. But also he can bury it a little bit and it's still taking enough away from the fastball that you'll swing over it and still it'll look like it was a slower pitch. So there's a lot of different things he can do with that pitch to weaponize it. But I think now having the multiple iterations of the slider, that really opens up a whole new world where there's going to be days, we talked about it with Yamamoto having variations of his splitter. There's going to be days where certain variations may not be there for you and you can just lean more on a different variation. Oh, I'm missing more glove side today. I'll try to just be more behind it and throw that version of the slider more or vice versa. So like things like that, it just gives you more options and I think makes you a lot scarier and a lot more difficult to game plan for. I mean, that outing that you just called, it was three innings, six Ks, no runs, no hits, one walk.
One hit. Lucan Baker, the only hit against Paul Skeens at the AAA level.
Lucan Baker. one walk or no walks?
I think one walk.
I mean, he made Lars Nootbaar look lost. Mm-hmm. And then pretty much any time he would fall behind, it was, I can get right back into this count. Buzz the fastball by him. So I'm just eager to see more of that slider. That was the one thing that was interesting in that last outing was the slider command wasn't totally there. And I think he's still learning kind of where to start each version of the slider and where it finishes and little things like that. Cause he threw that was the one thing that just hasn't been there through the first two starts in terms of what we're used to seeing from him command wise.
Yeah. At the end of the day, he's thrown six innings at the AAA level. He's got 11 punch outs and we're talking about his slider lagging. It's really been a fastball show and he has obliterated AAA hitting with almost exclusively fastball. And that splinker's been fun because there are some ABs where he'll really ditch the fastball and just throw the splinker. And there's a fun little conversation about like how it was kind of tabbed as a splinker because he's like, it's not the Duran splinker. But it's, you know, I guess it's a semi split grip and it's kind of coming off the side of my index. So like, we'll call it that. And Henry Davis was the one that like wanted to call it a splinker. He's like, we got to get a name on it. But it's fascinating to watch how he's attacking hitters. And really the box that baseball needs to see Paul Skeens check in AAA is literally just workload. Yeah. It's not anything when it comes to a tangible adjustment to a pitch. It is just, can he build up? And the answer last year in the regional and the super in Omaha was yes, he can.
Well, did you see what that nut job did after the outing? I know you did. He went over and threw a bullpen down on the side after they took him out.
Yeah, he threw like a 10, 15 pitch pen. And I
just love that. Like, he is the best version of, it's like the Max Scherzer psychopath type of thing where it's like, if he didn't like how he felt or he wanted to get more work in, like just walking right off the mound, wanting to throw more and going to throw a bullpen down on the side. Like, that's crazy. Stuff you love to see.
He's reared up and ready to go. And like this guy, and again, like I'm not going to spoil any of what you'll hear on Wednesday, but he ticks differently. And he says some things that it's like, wow, like that is, it's very confident in yourself. But then you take a step back and it's like, wait, it's entirely warranted. You have a top five fastball on the planet right now, maybe a top two fastball on the planet right now. Like, you're right. That thing is unhittable. Good for you.
Which I love. I mean, you got to have that confidence on the bump. And I think in a slightly different way, you listen to the Jackson Job conversation and there's a similar amount of confidence, but you know, and I think in a unique way of kind of saying it, there was a lot of roundabout ways of him diplomatically saying like, hey, you know I can get guys out with this. So I wanted to see if I can get guys out with that. And it's like toying with hitters at points. And that leads us into the number eight prospect in Tigers right-hander Jackson Job, who you look at the arsenal across the board, and that was kind of one of the things that separated him slightly, I think, from Skeens before we saw these variations of the slider. Was you could look at Job and say, hey, that's pretty much going to be a 70 fastball. That slider is right about ready to be a 70. And then he has mixed in this cutter that he added, which gives him a legit third pitch. And then the changeup that he has continued to find gave him a fourth pitch that could be above average or better. So looking at that complete arsenal and then the command, the way it was last year, it was like, okay, you know, this guy just has the complete package and there's so much to dream on there. But now you see a little bit more of the variation with Skeens. It hedges that argument a bit. But just looking at Job, I mean, we saw him up to 102 in spring training. And then in this last start, it was a laborious few innings. It was a bizarre start, the first one of the season here for him, where he kind of got hosed. I'll break that down in a moment. But the fastball, lively in the upper 90s, touches 100. And then you've got the slider, which was what he was known for, right? That's what really got him, I think, put him on the map on a different level when people were talking about him as, you know, the best arm in the class. And then I love the fact that in the time off where he was recovering from that back issue and just they were very carefully leading him back in, he finds this cutter. He finds a better feel for the changeup. He improves his delivery. He finds more velocity and just fills up the zone. It's just a solid arsenal, great command, athleticism, just like crazy with this guy, and the makeup to just put the cherry on top of all of it.
100%. It's a weird line score, and I'll let you supply context to it. But the one number that jumps out to me, it's like, all right, three hits, you know, three runs, zero earned. So he still has a zero ERA through two and a third. But through two and a third, he walked three. Mm-hmm. And he walked six in 64 innings last year. So he's halfway to his walk total in a 30th of the innings. I would love the context here because, like, Jackson Job walking three in a single start was never on my card. And his big league debut, like, even if he's nibbling, his command is too good to walk three in a start.
Yeah. No, and I legitimately think it was just a microscopic, just being off a tiny bit and then a couple things that kind of took him awry. And I wrote about this in the start notes. Cause again, you can only keep up with prospects so much and you see the stat line and you're like, ooh, you know, clunker from Job or ooh, clunker from whoever, or ooh, great start from whoever. And then being able to add the context to it is why I'm really excited to be doing these pitching prospect notes each week. But what's fascinating with Job is all three walks were on 3-2 counts. And the other aspect of it that was in, like, just misses or just, again, just like you imagine he executes, that's three pitches, right? That's not like four pitch walks. It's you execute three pitches differently. You have no walks, but a walk's a walk and it is what it is. And those were full count walks. 18 of his 21 fastballs were a strike, including a 99.3 mile per hour fastball to punch Dylan Cruz. The third inning of work. So he was always only going to go 50 pitches. Yeah. He cruised through the first. And then in the second inning, got himself into a little bit of trouble with one of those 3-2 walks, a base hit, ends up loading the bases, gets out of it. So it was a bit of a laborious inning. And then he knows he's going to be on a shorter pitch count going into the next inning. And, you know, still at that point, no runs, looking pretty good. First batter pops it up to the infield, plops right behind the mound. Next batter, ground ball to shortstop, botches it. Mm-hmm. So now you got first and second and driving up his pitch count. And I think at that point, he kind of knew he wasn't going to have much left. I think he knew that he was getting close to the 50 pitch mark. Recalibrates and punches out Dermis Garcia, and his day's over. So I felt like between a couple of errors, I think there was one walk after the two errors, and then he punched out Dermis Garcia. So I felt like just between all three walks being 3-2 pitches, a couple of errors that really accentuated like the run total, and then I think contributed to another walk. I felt like that was part of it as well, because I believe that ground ball that was actually botched, like you think about where you're at, instead of nobody on, two outs, you have first and second, no outs. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference there. He could have easily been out of there, three innings, you know, no runs, two walks, three Ks. And you're still looking at two walks, right? But I don't think it looks as bad. It just seemed like one of those weird fluky outings. And I'd bet a lot of money that he bounces back next start.
Maybe the weirdest thing out of all of it is Dermis Garcia got up with the Oakland A's last year in Major League Baseball, and he's now a Double-A Harrisburg Senator. So welcome to the Oakland A's in 2022, 2023, and 2024. I was a little surprised that Jobe and Ty Madden didn't break camp with Toledo. I found that interesting. Yeah. I know that Jobe only made one start in Double-A last year, but that start was utterly dominant. It was six shutout innings, four hits, no walks, six Ks.
Yeah. He went to the Fall League.
Yeah, like, he went to the Fall League. And with how well that Jobe and Madden both threw in spring training, knowing damn well that they weren't going to make the team out of spring training, I thought that proved enough that they were AAA ready.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was surprised. I think he'll get up there relatively quick. But I was surprised to see that. The last thing I'll say on Jobe is when you have that wipeout slider, the fastball command that he has, I think that's a huge part of it too, is he can just spot that heater in the upper 90s now with above average ride. And then that changeup now, I think, is a big X factor. He didn't have it last game, and that was part of the reason why I think we saw a few more walks, is he was ahead or he'd have an even count. Normally he has a good changeup going for him, misses, wanted to try to find it, kind of kept going back to it. He threw it 20% of the time. And I think just in an effort to try to find it and feel good with it going into his next start, led him into a lot more full counts where, you know, I think if he's pitching in a big league game, he probably goes back to the fastball instead and just dares these guys to try to hit it. So I saw a little bit of that too. But when you have that fastball, slider, changeup, cutter, and all these different looks, and they're all at a different speed, the fastball average 98, the slider's 85, the changeup's kind of 82, 83, and then the cutter is 91, 92. All these different speeds, all these different movements, and normally he's commanding it well at 21 years old. He has the makings of an ace. Yeah. Leads us into number seven here, who unfortunately went down with an injury. I haven't checked for an update yet, but Walker Jenkins, outfielder in the Minnesota Twins organization, long been, you know, one of my favorite prep bats. We talked about him out of the draft, and just looking at what he was able to do in spring training, some of the things that he showed there, and just looking at the tools across the board, he has the potential to be so fun as a potential plus hitter, plus power, above average runner. Right now can potentially play center field or be a great defender in a corner. He's 6'3", 215. I think he's going to grow into more power, and the approach is already pretty good for his age, and I think we'll continue to get better. From the left side, like it's really hard to poke a hole in Walker Jenkins' game, aside from the fact that I'm seeing these kind of flare-ups now. We had what was the injury that pulled him out of spring breakout? It was a quad.
A slight quad strain.
Yeah. And then now it's, I believe, I didn't see the report. I just saw him go. He made the grab in center field. It was an impressive catch. And then he just looked like he was hobbling off after that. But it looked like it wasn't the quad. It looked like it was more of, I think, the lower part of his leg.
Yeah, I just did a Twitter scan and I don't see a single thing. And that's the unfortunate thing about minor league baseball.
Yeah.
You can really get away with not diagnosing something for weeks at a time. There's a chance that Jenkins hops back into a game in 2 weeks and we never found out what the issue was.
But yeah, I think what I found here was Dan Hayes of The Athletic is reporting that he suffered a hamstring injury, but it's unclear how significant the injury is. I mean, you're just not going to get it from the team. And maybe you can get it from, you know, somebody within there or the player themselves. But a lot of times, yeah, the team. I mean, you remember the Daniel Espino stuff. We kept saying, like, knee? There's no way it's knee. There's got to be more going on. Why is he not throwing? Or, you know, why has it been so long? Blah, blah, blah. And we end up, you know, finding out what we find out way later. If it's a hamstring, like we saw it with J.J. Weatherholt and how long he's been sitting out with West Virginia, just came back recently. It's so early in Walker Jenkins' career. I have a feeling they're going to err on the side of caution here, and it might be a little bit before we see him back on the field if it is a hammy thing. And I am kind of worried about just that lower body. It's quad, now hammy. Hopefully that's something that, you know, doesn't become a trend for him. It's too early, but hopefully that's not a trend, especially for the Twins, man.
Yeah, like, what's up with the Twins, man? Byron Buxton, Royce Lewis, Brooks Lee is dealing with, like, chronic back stuff at this point. And now
they knew that going in, but yeah.
What?
They knew that one going in, I think, with Brooks Lee. Jenkins, no. And hopefully, again, it's not a trend, because talking about Jenkins, the player, what really ended up pushing him higher for me is the polish for such a young and big and physical, you know, hitter already to make the swings that he's making at pitches in different locations, to already be leaning into power. I keep talking about how the swing out of the draft was reminding me of Manzardo, but I think there's a much more balanced feel to drive line drives to all fields. I think that there's a little bit more adjustability in a swing. And I think you have a chance here. If you have a plus plus hit and fringe plus power, you're a monster. You're one of the best, you know, prospects in baseball, and you're a potential superstar. You pair that with the ability to play center field, even at a passable level, or play a great corner. And that's why I have him as one of the best prospects in the game. That swing from the left side, the projection that you compare with that, and just the feel that he has already is pretty rare, especially for a guy that's 6'3", 215. Jenkins can be really special. I just hope that, you know, we get the opportunity to see him play a lot this year, because I was surprised that he didn't get assigned to high A. I think he's more than ready for that. I think he would have made quick work of low A. So whenever he comes back, I think he's going to make quick work of low A. I want to see this guy in high A. I want to see him in double by the end of the year. I think he's that good. I want to see him challenged a little bit.
Yeah, there's a weird thing with low A, especially with the Florida State League teams, where you get to almost keep that guy at the complex for a longer period of time, so you can closely monitor a Walker.
Especially now.
Right. Like, I think it made sense out of camp to have him there on the heels of that quad issue. It's okay, you're here. Let's see you get 100% healthy. And then we're going to send you to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I know it took Emmanuel Rodriguez a good bit of time to get out to Cedar Rapids. Yeah. He was in Fort Myers for a long time, longer
than he had injury issues as well.
Yeah. I think the Twins operate like Fort Myers as an extension of their camp, where they can monitor everything. And that makes a ton of sense. And I don't fault them at all for that. My only deep hitting analysis on Walker Jenkins that I've got for you is 6'3", 215 feels underselling for him. He plays like he's 6'5", 230. He moves really well. You've got a 55 on the run tool, but man, he looks almost like that lefty Chris Bryant build, where he's clearly a good athlete. He's just bigger than you would expect.
I think there's a little bit of that, like, Langford, where you don't realize how fast he is because of how big and just physical he already is. I mean, Langford's a little bit shorter and wider, but still, I think everybody undersold Langford's speed, which we'll get to in a moment. And I think it's because of how big he is. And I don't think people realize how quick he's scooting. And I think that's the thing. I'll literally need to see more of Jenkins running in person, but there's a chance he could be a plus runner. And just from what I've been able to gather, it could be underselling it, which is even scarier. I think that this guy could be, he's a top prospect in baseball candidate. If you think about who's going to be in the minors long enough, who's going to graduate ahead of him, and who's just capable of doing everything that is required to be the number one prospect, which I think is always a well-rounded game, a track record, floor ceiling combination, all of those things. I think Jenkins could easily be one of those guys.
He's the only guy in the lower minors that is in the top 10. So
that's exactly a perfect note to kind of contextualize that. Number six, James Wood, outfielder with the Washington Nationals, who had a wonderful spring training, made some adjustments in the box that we've talked about, starting the load a little bit earlier, just kind of having the moves be more repeatable. And that was really all he needed. The swing was always darn good. He just seemed to be caught in between at times between the fastball and the changeup. And just didn't seem like he looked rushed. That's what we talked about, where he looked rushed a lot of the time. Did not look rushed at all the spring training. He didn't look rushed when I saw him on the backfields. And the power is as evident as ever. And he's scooting too. He can really run. Another guy that just has no business running as fast as he does for how big he is. I mean, when you look at James Wood, it's 40 homer potential or more. The hit tool is better than I think a lot of people would have even expected for a 6'7" guy. Even if it's a 40, 45 hit tool, that's more than enough with the kind of power that he brings to the table, along with the athleticism. But I think that the hit tool could be a little bit better than that. I think he can play a decent center field. We'll see. Ultimately could move to a corner, but I think he's quick enough and you know, has some components that could make him decent out there. If he moves to a corner, he could be a great right fielder. But we're talking about top of the scale power from the left side, great speed, and the ability to play all three outfield spots likely with a hit tool that continues to just track in the right direction. He has superstar written all over him if he hits enough, and he continues to show us that he has a better chance to hit enough every single time we check in.
Yeah, he put together maybe the best spring training that we saw from any prospect. And I know that Wyatt Langford put together an amazing spring training, but given where we thought Langford was and given where we thought Wood was entering spring training, I could make the argument that Wood's spring training was more impressive and Langford had the better baseline numbers. But James Wood walked at a 19% clip in big league spring training. I wasn't expecting that. I know he's got solid plate discipline. You've got a 40 right now, but 11 walks and 57 plate appearances, that's a 19% clip. He had a 509 OBP in 22 games in spring training. It was not this brief little sample. Again, 57 plate appearances. This guy ran a 509 on base percentage. The power was there, yes. He stole three bases, yes. But his maturity in a situation where he could absolutely be exposed as an immature hitter was mighty impressive.
I'm glad you brought up the plate discipline, because he was chasing sliders like crazy last year at Double A.
There were some non-competitive at bats that I watched him take in Harrisburg last year.
Oh yeah, and again, I just think he was feeling rushed and uncomfortable and just not seeing the ball well. And now it just seems like he's tracking it so much better with the way he's able to get into his launch position earlier and be more in rhythm. And you got to be in rhythm when you're that big, or you have to be preset and just ready to go. Judge is kind of in rhythm. And then you'll see some other guys that, you know, are preset, ready to go, let the natural freak strength and athleticism eat. I'm with you. I think the plate discipline, again, we did this before the season, or even, you know, made some slight adjustments to some things we saw early in spring training. But the plate discipline is tangibly different. And, you know, you need a larger sample size to really confidently adjust that kind of grade. But I think, you know, we said the 50 future. I think he's getting pretty much closer to that 50 future already. And maybe there's a little bit more in there. Because if you look at what he did in spring training against some of the best arms he's ever seen, and then you look at what he's doing right now in AAA, he's continuing to walk. He's not chasing secondaries as much. And I think that's a huge component to this whole equation as well for him, because it's a big zone. He's going to whiff naturally. You need to be able to minimize those free strikes you're going to be given to these pitchers, because it's already hard enough when you're built the way that James Wood is built. So to be able to parlay that spring training into a 6-game stretch here in AAA, where, you know, he's hitting 350, it's a 7 hits and 20 at bats, but he's walked 7 times and struck out just 5 times. To have an 1,000 OPS as being James Wood with 0 home runs to this point, I know it's a super small sample. That is extremely encouraging, because that's a more well-rounded player instead of that all or nothing, you know, guy that maybe was somewhat of a risk when you just look at the player that James Wood is. I'm really pumped about what he's got going on. And the craziest part, man, is like, he's hitting the way he's hitting right now. And he has also had some terrible batted ball luck. Let me take you through some of his outs so far. A 105 mile per hour fly out, 373 feet the other way. A 109 mile per hour line out to dead center field at 364 feet. And then one other 105 mile per hour line out, 362 feet. So I mean, this guy could easily have a couple more extra base hits. Like, he's legitimately been unlucky in a lot of ways so far. I think things have clicked for him. I think we've seen enough to say things are starting to click for this guy.
Absolutely. I think the immediate comfort at AAA is the biggest tell. Because if you were to ask me after this strong of a spring training, what he's going to look like in his first week in AAA, I would have said, oh, he's going to press like crazy because he feels really close because he like hammered big league pitching in spring training. It's like, I don't need to be here. Like, let's go. Let's, you know, let's hit my way to the big leagues. Let's homer my way to the big leagues. If I've got, you know, five homers in the first 2 weeks, they'll call me up, that kind of thing. That can result in no walks, a bunch of Ks, a bunch of chase, and you can tangibly see him pressing. Not the case, like literally the opposite. He goes to Rochester. He's incredibly comfortable with the hot stretch that he had in spring training, and he's just riding it. A comfortable James Wood in AAA is incredibly scary, given you've got the full ABS there during the week, and then you've got the challenge system there as well. So he's not going to get hosed. He's never going to feel the necessity to expand his zone. That is going to unlock a level of Wood that we haven't seen through AA.
And we're starting to see it. So I'm very pumped to get a larger sample here, and he'll be up this year. I mean, adjust that ETA 2024. Yeah. It's going to be this year for Wood. And I think there's exciting days ahead now for Nationals fans, which they deserve. They definitely deserve. And I think Wood will be kind of be the first guy to usher in, you know, that next wave of really fun young talent that's going to be coming up to join Abrams and Gore and some of the other exciting pieces that they have up there. We're going to get into the top five in just a moment here, but before that, a quick break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Number five, another big leaguer that we're talking about here. And it's crazy because he's like in his second season. It feels like it technically is, but he only played a handful of games in 2023. And then now off to a bit of a slow start, but I'm not too worried about him. Evan Carter, outfielder, Texas Rangers organization. Rangers crazy. We're going to talk about another Ranger, which is nuts when we're already at number five. But Carter, I mean, what he did at the end of last year was really impressive. What he did in the playoffs was really impressive. But remember, he was a guy that we had in the top 15 before that, a guy that we really liked, again, for a lot of the same reasons that we like Jackson Merrill, that floor ceiling combination, the knack for the game, just the ability to squeeze out every drop of your tools. But I think the thing that even I overlooked to a degree is that he is a little toolsier than I think people thought. He scoots more than I thought. That was a run grade I definitely adjusted. I did not think he was that fast. And he is someone that I think is going to turn into a better defender as he gets more reps out there. The power is going to continue to develop, but the fact that he's already elite plate discipline wise, the fact that there is an above average field to hit, he can play a great corner and I think still be able to fill in and play in center field. They're not going to need it on this team. It's just a really well-rounded game that I think is only going to get better as he hopefully improves his ability to hit left on left and also just improves his ability to drive the ball to all fields, which I think will go hand in hand. I think right now we're seeing pitchers really work away from him because of how well he pulls balls and how much he likes to take pitchers on the outer half. I haven't seen many hitters take borderline balls, like pitches that are a half a ball off, more than Evan Carter. He is so good. He has a better feel for the zone, I think, than a lot of umpires. But at the same time, pitchers are definitely wearing him out away. And I'm assuming that, you know, adjustment will come. But that pull side power is legit. The speed is legit. And the approach is as good as they come. Those are things that are going to make you a good big leaguer, 9.9 times out of 10.
He didn't have a hit through the first five games of his season. And he wasn't the butt of every joke. Why? Because he had like a 350 OBP during that stretch. He's third in baseball right now in walks drawn behind Mookie Betts and Aaron Judge, if I'm not mistaken. So like we're talking about a guy that even when he can't hit water, if he fell out of a boat, this guy is going to figure out a way to get on base. And he showed that. He's hitting like, I think, a buck 70. He had, by the way, like a multi-hit day and then a three-hit day right after that. And then he walked again last night. So, like, he's fine. Evan Carter's fine. I think he's hitting like .180, .190 right now. But he's got a .400 on-base percentage in his first eight games of the season. He's
at the major league level. It's one thing to do that in the minors. Another thing to do that in the bigs.
It's another thing to do it in the bigs. And you mentioned, like, they're staying away. He's not going to get frustrated. He's not going to say, all right, I'm going to go meet this pitch away. He's going to say, no, you're going to come to me. If not, I'm going to take four of those and I'm going to be standing on first base and I can let my 70 run tool eat. I think he's going to have a lot more stolen bases on a year by year basis than a lot of people would expect when we look back in 5-10 years.
I agree with that. I mean, that's going to be an aspect of his game. I just don't even think he got a chance to develop much because he was hitting so well. And I think he was a little bit banged up a little bit last year and just climbing so quickly. Like, it just was probably not on the priority list at that point as he was trying to prove that he could get up to the big leagues and help that team, you know, win a World Series as he did. What stands out to me, though, is, as you mentioned, you always say, like, the walks don't slump. The start to this year is a perfect example of that, because even with that slow start, he has a few more games where he picks up a couple hits and all of a sudden his OBP is well over 400. His OPS, even with no home runs and only three extra base hits, the OPS would be over 800 real quick. And again, he's not whiffing. He's going to give you good at-bats even when he's not doing well.
That's the thing real quick that I want to point out. Like, this is the time of year where you see the putrid OPSs. Like, Francisco Lindor's OPS right now, I think he's in the 300s, 200s or something. Mm-hmm. Like, some of those Mets. And you see a lot of incredible players that are going to end the year with an OPS over 800 that are OPSing like 300 because they got off to a terrible start. This guy, by people's standards, by standards, got off to a terrible start, and he's got a 710 OPS through eight games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And that's why I feel really good about the floor here. But when you factor in the speed, he could fill out more too. Like, there's plenty of room in that frame. He is still pretty thin and still is able to put charges into baseballs. You're going to have a balance here of great speed, above average power, above average hit, and then the ability to draw walks with the best of them. I would say from a plate discipline perspective, there's a couple 70s that we have, but this is the best plate discipline, I think, of any prospect that we have on this list. Because, again, it's beyond just the feel. It's the commitment to it. It's never straying from it. Even after the slow start's a perfect example of that. Never straying from it and just trusting that it'll, you know, put him in a good spot most of the time and that the dust will always settle the right way. And I think it's about to for Carter as the season continues to roll. Number four, Jackson Chourio, another big leaguer who's settling in pretty nicely for the Milwaukee Brewers. Chourio signed that big deal before debuting, record breaker for someone who has not debuted yet. Understandable why the Brewers would give him that deal, considering he hits the crap out of the ball, absolutely flies, and I think is still just scraping the surface of what he can eventually be. I was shocked. We got a lot of flack for Chourio being four and not like two. I was not expecting that. I get it, I guess, because he's super fun and got paid a lot of money and has crazy upside.
Yeah.
But I also, like, we're going to get to the next three guys and, you know, we can kind of just talk about what separated them a little bit from Chourio. Chourio is already making an impact because of how hard he hits the ball. I think that field of hit is has always been underrated with him because his aggression would kind of take him out of it. And just another classic example of why that hit tool and plate discipline, just discrepancy there, or just having the two grades there is helpful. You know, I think we're seeing still some of that aggression early here. And I do think that it's going to catch up to him as the season progresses. And he's already seeing more sliders than fastballs. We're already kind of seeing him not really walk, put the ball on the ground a bit. But at the same time, through eight games, he's slashing .281, .324, .500. But kind of the opposite of what we were talking about in the Evan Carter conversation is he's got to hit. Because if he's not hitting, he's not going to walk. So that's where I get a little concerned about just the streakiness of him at this point. But ultimately, I think that the approach is going to continue to get better. I'm sure listeners remember we had Brenton Del Chiaro, the hitting coordinator of the Brewers, on. And he talked about how Chourio just didn't even really understand the importance of being more patient and a little bit more selective, and felt the pressure, you know, when he was tabbed number one prospect by Baseball America, like he felt the pressure to kind of validate that a little bit. And you don't validate that by keeping your bat on your shoulder, at least not in the head of a 18, 19 year old for sure. And I think that's also what makes Evan Carter so absurd, is like, how did he control that? Especially when he's trying to fly up. But then you saw him start to taper off in the chase and have slightly better swing decisions. I think Chorio is, you know, a superstar potential, you know, here in terms of what he can do. But I think the glove is still a little bit of a work in progress. The bat is just so naturally gifted that we're seeing him contribute now, and it's not even close to what he could be when it's all said and done. And I think this is a guy that, very similar to the conversation that we were having with Merrill in terms of, hey, he might not turn into Jackson Chorio until year three. I think it might be a little bit more sporadic with him because of just how volatile his game can be. But I also think, I think he's similar in the respect that he might be a good big leaguer for 2 years, frustrating but good. And then he might not really turn into Jackson Chorio until year three, where then at that point he could be, you know, one of the better young outfielders in the game.
Yeah. My thing is, close your eyes. Do this. Close your eyes. Do you see an MVP on Jackson Chorio's mantle? He might not be tooled out enough.
No, I don't think so.
Right. So, like, I think the baseball fan and the prospect industry as a whole is quick to tab teenagers that are really good as being incredibly tooled out with MVPs in their future. And that's not Chorio. Chorio is very advanced, so he climbed. But he's not an 80 power guy. He's a really good runner, but he's not an 80 runner. He's not an 80 defender. He was just advanced at a really young age. And he's really advanced at a really young age. And that's why he's going to be good in the big leagues. And then he can turn into a great big leaguer. But you need to be tooled out and have that crazy high floor to have MVPs in your future. And I think that you can make the MVP argument for the three guys in front of him. And Chorio could be going to all-star game after all-star game after all-star game.
Yep.
But when you close your eyes in 8 years from now, you name the five best players in baseball. I don't think you can realistically name Jackson Chorio. And I think that you can realistically name the three guys in front of him.
I do agree with that. I think when you look at the, if Chorio played a good center field, I'd probably
put him in the MVP conversation. Yeah.
Because then you could start to say, like, oh, it's got, there's some J-Rod to him a little bit or whatever. But right. J-Rod hits the ball way harder. And Chorio could grow into more power, but he's 6 foot. It's not like he's 6'3". You know, and I do think he'll grow into a little bit more power. But I think ultimately what he is going to be a guy that hits a lot of really hard line drives. He'll put charges into baseballs, don't get me wrong, but he's not going to walk a ton. I think he does eventually turn into a good corner outfielder. He's going to steal a ton of bags. And I think that's an aspect of it too. But I think it's more 20 to 25 home runs. I think it's 40 bags. I think he can, when he continues to develop, it's going to be a higher batting average, maybe not the highest walk rate. And then, you know, a player like that would be really, really valuable if they could play a great center field. And I think that's the part that's slightly missing. And I think people say, oh, look at that grab by Chorio. There's a lot of grabs out there where it's like the old, if you just like got a good jump, you would have grabbed it in stride, and he ends up recovering because he's a freak athlete. I see a lot of similarities offensively to Michael Harris. And I think Michael Harris, you know, if you could do it over again, like, I mean, if that guy was somehow a prospect, he's number one because of what he can do, or at least he's right there with Jackson Holliday. But when you look at what Harris does, he hits the crap out of the ball. He's too aggressive. He puts it on the ground a bit too much, gets away with both because he has a good feel to hit and hits the crap out of the ball. And then what's always bolstered is he's going to give you war in center field by being one of the best center fielders out there. I think Chorio gives you a little bit more value on the base paths. I think Chorio is probably a little bit more likely to elevate consistently. And I think when you look at the other aspects, though, Harris, better center fielder. Harris, at this point, hits the ball harder. And so it becomes an interesting conversation here of, you know, what are you hoping for the end goal being with Chorio? I think the end goal, you're hoping for 30-30. And I think you can get that from a corner with minimal walk. And, you know, I think an approach that can be frustrating at times. He needs to elevate more. I think he will start to do that. But, I think at the end of the day, he's a high probability above average regular just off of his natural skill. You have the all-star upside. And I just don't know if there's the war accumulation that you're going to get from the top two guys. And then I also just think in terms of what you can dream on, the guy that we're going to talk about next can just do some things with the bat that's going to really separate. Again, if Trujillo played a good center field, he edges out the next guy we're going to talk about.
For sure. And that, I think, is the big one where it's like, what can you dream on? And we're talking like perennial all-star. You're not mm-hmm. just talking all-star upside, like perennial no. all-star update. But to be one of the best in baseball, you need to have a number that jumps out. And that can be a war number. That can be a home run number. That can be a batting average number, an OPS number. And like stolen bases are great, but they're not the number. Esteori Ruiz stole 67 bags. He was not in the running because everything else fell to the wayside. And I'm not trying to compare Jackson Chourio to Esteori Ruiz because Chourio is way more complete than Esteori is. Having said that, like you need something else to be eye-popping now in this era of baseball. And like aside from stolen bases, I just don't know what's going to be eye popping. It's all going to be really good, but nothing's
really
going to be eye popping.
Yeah. And there's more pressure on that hit tool continuing to get to where it needs to get. And I think it will. I really do. And I think he's going to be a pretty close to a perennial all-star. I would bet on that. Number three, that leads us right into one of the best power bats in the minor leagues who fortunately dodged a bullet when it comes to the injury. Yep. Junior Caminero, third baseman in the Tampa Bay Rays organization, had a little bit of a quad strain that was a little scary trying to run hard on a ground ball back to the pitcher. Fortunately, seems like it's very minor, should be back maybe as soon as the end of this week and get back going there for the Durham Bulls. He was off to a ridiculous start already too. And Caminero, the difference is people might be saying, oh, well, if you're saying that Chourio isn't at the number three spot because of defense, you know, why is Caminero number three? Well, Caminero's three because I think he can hit 45 home runs. And if we're looking into what could be a differentiator, you know, what these guys' ceilings are, I do think, and this is kind of like how risk tolerant are you? You run 1,000 simulations of these guys' career. The median war would probably be better for Chourio because I think the floor would be lower for Caminero. Because if Caminero is not raking, you know, in terms of just crushing home runs, like, yeah, it might be a little bit harder for him to impact the game in other ways. But I think the way that Caminero has turned himself into a passable third baseman, and I think the way that he impacts the ball, the field of hit, honestly, for a guy that's as powerful as he is pretty crazy. And then also what stands out to me is he's doing this. He hit 30 home runs pretty much last year while still not even elevating as much as he could. Whereas, you know, you saw it, the lack of elevation, you know, consistent elevation impact Chourio's power output from time to time. Yeah. Caminero takes B swings that just get out of the yard in a hurry. And even the game before that took John Means 400 to dead center. I felt like he just got better and better. Every time I checked in, he's 20 years old. In terms of power output, nobody was putting up more gaudy EVs. 110 mile per hour, 90th percentile. I think it was like 110 and a half mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity with an in-zone contact rate above 80%. As far as I was able to track, he was the only guy in minor league baseball with those two figures. The chase rate continued to dwindle under 30%. You know, and that's kind of that magic number for these guys. Chourio is kind of 35%. And, you know, once you get to 30, it's a little high. If you can get it closer to 25 or lower, that's great. And he's kind of in between there right now, but just already tracking closer to the 25 number is great. The contact rates overall got better as the year progressed. And the fact that somebody like Junior Caminero could strike out as little as he did. And I think yeah. it's important to remember, too, that he jumped pretty quickly in terms of lighting up the lower levels. They bump him up to double A and he's got to go straight to the tacked balls. Does just fine there. And then once they took those tacked balls out of circulation, the strikeout rate dropped even more. Ended the year trending in the right direction. Started the year hitting it as well as anybody. It's just really insane stuff offensively from Caminero to do what he did from a batting average perspective, a power perspective, just kind of everything.
There's really no good comp for him anywhere but first base. And the fact that he can play a passable third base and you've got 50 grade third base, is incredible. Like, this guy played shortstop in a major league game last year,
which is hilarious.
It's hilarious. And like, you hope that's not the place for him long term. But the fact that he survived there,
you're not sticking Yandy Diaz there.
No, hell no, man. And the thing is, the closest offensive comp you can get is to someone like Yandy Diaz or someone like Pete Alonso. Yep. Like, that's where we're at with him, man. You're talking about Pete Alonso that can play third base. That's a different cat. And is 50 homers in the tank? Shit, maybe.
Maybe.
It's going to be probably more Ks than Alonso, because Alonso, like, at his best is punching at like a 16% clip, which is absurd. And that's what's going to make him a $150 million first baseman. But, I mean, Caminero has the ability to be that nine-figure power guy that really never comes along. I tried to go to third base and find even a loose comp, and you can't do it because Austin Riley does too many things better than Caminero, and Caminero may just have more raw power than Riley does. But I mean, he is seemingly a unicorn at third base.
I think like that's the closest third baseman you can find though.
But like, Mayo fits the Riley bucket a bit better.
I agree. But Caminero is also 20. And where was Austin Riley at 20?
I mean, he was pretty much this. Like, Riley got up. He was not that good at age 22. And then at age 23, he was all right. And then at 24, he became Austin Riley.
You know what stands out to me? Final 50 games, which that's after the tacked ball, but still also includes a couple big league, you know, a little big league stint as well. 317, 379, 600 slash line. 8% walk rate, 14.5% K rate. I mean, that is absurdity.
That's Alonso.
That's Alonso. And then the other aspect that blows my mind is it's all fields. Yeah, he'll get into a pull side, but he hits a lot of home runs the other way. Even just looking at the spray charts, opposite field, or just let's say to the right of center field, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 home runs. To the right of center field. And that's just like, that was tracked. Maybe there was a few more that were sprinkled in there. He can take it to all fields.
I saw him flirt with the line in the Dominican, and dude, like, I mean, he put a line drive out down the right field line that nobody else could get the mustard on in that league.
It's hard for me to quantify the power capabilities here. He's the kind of guy that can just take the ball out of the catcher's mitt and still somehow keep it fair the other way and hit it for a home run. Like, this guy can mistake hit homers, and you don't find guys like that very often. I don't want to compare him to like an O'Neill Cruz, but I think he's like cut from that cloth of, how did he hit that out? Or wait, that's going to get out? And there's just not a lot of guys that can do that. And being able to do that without egregious whiff is rare. And Junior Caminero's rare. Number two, Wyatt Langford, Texas Rangers. And I think it's insane that he was able to make this a conversation now, where we even had some comments on our Instagram that were like, oh, Langford's better than Holiday. And I think, you know, I lean the younger player, and we'll get into that at number one. But you know what? Like, it's not even like ridiculous to say, because Langford can do a lot of things and he's pretty insane. The fact that I also undersold the run grade here, because we were talking about, I think we were one of the only ones that put a 60 on his run. Like, I talked like lower run grades at a lot of other places, and even our 60 is too low. He's a 70 plus runner. He flies. Yeah. He's like, and you look at Savant, you know, I didn't go there, but Bubbles. I saw tweets about it. Bubbles. What was he? 99th percentile, 99.9 percentile in sprint speed.
I think he got to 30 feet per second. Like, that's the thing. We don't know how good of runners these guys are unless you're there, boots on the ground, or you get video of watching that guy go home to first, home to third, anything like that. You don't know unless you either pull the stopwatch out or you wait for that guy to get to the big leagues and you see sprint speed on Savant.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think it's a useful tool. But, you know, a lot of times I'll try to even just get video and be able to go back at home and try to stopwatch it just a little bit more accurately. But what's crazy to me is the field of hit, the approach. He's getting hosed right now, especially that last game.
Like, oh, he was got a lot. Killed.
He got killed. Handled it like a like a pro. Just kind of knows, hey, it's the rookie thing, and that umpire
was handle just, everything like a pro, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, of course he is. I mean, again, a couple ABs have that were swayed the wrong way because of bad calls have kind of been the difference for him here, and you know, I think the numbers would be even better out of the gate than they've been if it weren't for that. But I mean, when you look at the power, you look at the speed now being what it is. Consistently elevates too, which is a huge aspect of this whole thing. When you hit the ball as hard as Langford does, the outfield defense is a work in progress, but I think with his speed is just going to continue to get better because he can, you know, have that recovery speed. And then, you know, I think the reads are going to get better. But the fact that he posts well above average contact rates, fantastic chase rates, hits the crap out of the ball, and then elevates consistently, that's an offensive profile that, yeah, I think, remember I said Colt Keith is the safest offensive profile in the minor leagues. That was kind of before Wyatt. We had enough of a sample of Wyatt Langford. I'd say from a power hitter's perspective, this is as safe of an offensive profile as you're going to find.
And the ceiling is one that could result in a most valuable player award.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's, we talked about it. It's Paul Goldschmidt with more speed. Like, you know, what's Paul Goldschmidt with more speed?
MVP.
Not first base, in left field.
Like, yeah. MVPs, three MVPs, two or three.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a real scenario where we look back and say, oh, like, I get why everybody had Holiday up ahead of him because he was so young. And the flip side of it, and we'll get to Holiday in a second, is like, you know, it's just the youth and what he's doing age to level is crazy. But what Langford's doing, like, experience to level is pretty nuts too, considering he didn't really play as a freshman, burst onto the scene, plays 2 years of college baseball, and then flies through the minor leagues as quick as we've really seen anybody that's not an Angel. I mean, that is pretty crazy stuff because he's not a finished product by Wyatt Langford standards, and he's only going to get better. But to already be making the contacts he's making, to be motoring the way he's motoring, to be walking already as well. I know he's not walking so far in the big league stint, but again, I think he's been getting hosed a little bit. The plate discipline's been great. We're talking 35 homers. I mean, I think the stolen base component's going to become more of a part of his game as he gets more comfortable with that. And I think the big X factor when we're talking about how complete of a player he can be is going to be the defense.
Yeah.
But remember, this guy came up as a catcher in college. Yeah. He's been playing outfield for not that long. If the defense can even get to an average place, then he's going to be a 5-6 win guy most years, I think.
Yeah, perennially. It feels very, in terms of just like war and production, I almost equate it to Gunnar Henderson, where like Gunnar might have a little bit more speed, but then like,
I don't know, does power. He know? Like,
I don't know. I don't know. Good question.
I think the glove's better. That's it.
Yeah. Like, okay. So I view it similarly because Gunner is the floor of a 3-win player, but the ceiling of a 6.5-7-win player. I view that as Wyatt Langford's type of comp.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I think Langford doesn't give you as much defensive value, but he's going to give you, I think, a little bit less whiff. I mean, when he starts to settle in more, and I think the game power could even be better. So yeah. When you look at it from that lens, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I think just it's going to come down to that outfield defense from a war perspective, but from an offensive perspective, there's not really much else to look for here.
I'm not going
to
poke a hole in anything.
He elevates, he hits it hard, he makes good swing decisions, and he makes a lot of contact. There's really nothing else to look for in terms of just get comfortable, continue to just learn how guys are going to pitch to you.
I'm with you.
Talk about comfortable. Jackson Holiday has been comfortable every single place we've seen him stop so far. And that's why he's the number one prospect in baseball for us here at Just Baseball. Holiday, it's just silly, man. Like what he is doing already, what he has done already as a guy that just turned 20 years old. It's just silly. He had a strong case to make the big league roster on opening day. Doesn't. You don't hear a peep out of him. What does he do through the first 9 games? He's part of the Norfolk Terror squad that, you know, has just been putting up runs on everybody. Sitting 342, 490, 605 already this year. Florida with the cycle, I think, in game one. He's just been awesome right away. And that's just what's so impressive about him. He's also hitting the ball as hard as we've seen him hit it. So you're seeing the power continue to tick up in his game as well. And you know, that's going to continue to happen. I think that's a big reason why people, you know, have him as the consensus number one is we're seeing what he can do already, but there's also so much more to dream on here as he just continues to grow into his body and just mature physically to be doing what he's doing already. I think is just a testament to the fact that he's just you know, born for baseball and like it's almost like raised to play the game at the highest level. And it's just like a disciple basically. Like it's, I don't really know how else to describe it. But now seeing the power continue to tick up, it's really exciting. Also the speed being there, like he's faster than I think a lot of people might have thought as well. The defense is going to keep getting better, I think, as well as he gets more reps there. And I think the big separator for me, or at least the thing that gave Holiday that slight edge, is like he's doing what he's doing now in AAA and against big league arms. And like at that point for Wyatt Langford, or even you could say what Holiday was doing last year, just dismantling across every level, getting to AAA. At that point, I think Wyatt Langford at that age had 4 at-bats for the University of Florida, trying to find a way to get on the field. And you can't totally blame that on Langford, but I think it also puts into perspective where Jackson Holiday's already at and imagine where he might be in 2 years.
Yes, absolutely. I am officially out on Jackson Holiday, though, because he's 5th on his team in OPS right now. I can't.
That's like, crazy.
You can't have the number one prospect in baseball be outside the top 4 on your own team in OPS. By the way, his OPS is 1095. I just want to run you through like Norfolk right now, because I think they have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They have 10 guys with an OPS at 1,000 or better with 4 or more games played. Heston Kerstad has a 1548. Peyton Burdick has a 1417. Kyle Stowers at 1253. Connor Norby at 1205. And then you've got Jackson Holiday at 1095 and Kobe Mayo at 1091. This team is the greatest show on dirt right now. Tap in. Holiday got sent down, or not sent down, but like he got reassigned to minor league camp when, you know, he probably shouldn't have been reassigned to minor league camp, whatever. Again, it's the James Wood conversation. Are you going to take out your frustration by trying to hit 500? Well, Holiday's hitting 340, but he's got 11 walks in 9 games.
As a leadoff hitter.
As a leadoff hitter. This had like he is the prototype of best leadoff hitter in the game. I don't think it's egregious to say that when this guy gets up, he becomes a top 10 leadoff hitter in baseball from the jump. And there's a chance 2 years into his career, we're talking about this guy as the best leadoff hitter in baseball.
It's all the things that we talked about with Evan Carter and then just like kind of level him up, you know, like he's has that elite approach. He went his only like bad game, I think, you know, really in the last like week or so was 0-for-3 bad, relatively speaking. He walked 3 times. So like it's like that's still a good game. That's your 500 on base percentage. Yep. So you take that. He's a better hitter than Evan Carter from just a bat to ball perspective and just being able to drive the ball to all fields. He's a guy that also, you know, can lean into elevating a bit more, but that's going to come as he just continues to get more comfortable with his swing and his body and all those things. But we're already seeing those EVs tick up. 13 batted balls already 100 miles an hour and above. And I think that's, again, going to continue to get better and better and better. You know, I want to see him be a little bit more aggressive on the base pass, but I could also understand why you want to be careful right now in AAA. And also, when is he going to steal? They're boat racing everybody. So it's been one of those times where it's like, it's too early for him to really be able to test it out. I've been interested at how much he's been playing second base. And I think that's really in preparation of getting him to the big league soon.
Yeah.
He's been playing more second base than shortstop. And I think when you look at it from that lens, I think he's going to be up there very, very soon and getting more consistent reps at second base. He's going to be a great second baseman. I think he can play a good shortstop, but I think he can play a great second base. And that'll be one of the most exciting middle infields we've seen in a long time with Gunnar at short and Jackson at second base. Again, the hit tool is going to, I think, progress to double plus. The plate discipline's double plus. The game power is probably average now, but will, I think, improve to above average. He's a plus runner. And it'll be an above average to maybe plus defender at second base. It's like, it's not the same type, but it's like that Marcus Semien 6 war second baseman where you're just like, holy crap. Yeah, we could put him at shortstop, but we don't need it. We don't need to because we got another insane shortstop. And so instead, we'll just have the best second baseman in the game kind of thing, or one of the best second basemen in the game. I think that's what Holiday is going to be for them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Ramon Urias is 1-for-17 at the major league level. Do the right thing, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't, and like, yeah, people are like kind of lumping Ryan O'Hearn. O'Hearn kind of rakes. Like,
O'Hearn does like, kind of rake. And O'Hearn and Holiday is not a conversation. O'Hearn and Kerstad is the conversation.
Yes, correct. And, yeah. You know, I can hear that. But Arias.
I mean, Kerstad has 24 driven in 8 games. So
like, he's on pace for 555 up until I think the 8th game. I don't know what the new pace was. I wasn't going to do those math calculations again. But I mean, again, 20 years old. He's only going to get better. He's the most mature 19/20-year-old hitter I've seen, and we're still seeing him develop. I don't even know what it's going to look like when it's all said and done, but it could look like a blend of batting titles and a lot of power and defense, and I don't even know. It's just going to be one of those things where, and you know he's a big leaguer, you know he's a good one, but you don't know how good, and that's for all the right reasons, because I don't know how high the ceiling is, because there's so many things that he can just continue to push higher and higher and higher. Yeah. That'll do it for this episode. We got a Paul Skeens interview coming up in a couple days here, or probably by tomorrow if you're listening on a Tuesday. I hope you enjoyed this rundown of the entire top 100. We will continue to put out the team top prospect lists as well to finish out the top 30, or all of the 30 team top prospect lists, excuse me. So 15 more of those. Looking forward to turning those out over the next month or two, and a lot more interviews to throw your way as well. Jack, any final thoughts?
We talked about the draft on the last episode. It could go down as one of the best top 10 picks in recent memory. I think this batch of top 10 prospects, and expand it to 11 with Cruz, hell, expand it to 13 with Mayo and Bisayo. I think this crop of elite prospects is going to be one that we remember for a very long time.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a high hit rate on this group.
High hit rate and like a lot of all-time classics. Like, we look at all-time bad top 10s, and that's been a thing in recent years. But we're going to look at this one. I do think is one of the better of the last decade or two.
Because there's an insane floor-ceiling combination with these guys, yeah, that you just don't get a lot. Usually it's a lot more of the Chorios and Camineros, where I think now you got a lot more of the floor-ceiling combination, which is really valuable. We'll talk prospects with you on Wednesday.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.